We're back again. What's going on? It's Matt.
And I am. My coffee cup is full again, pokey.
And we are They Go to 11. What is going on? On our last podcast, the our top 11 inspirations to us and your top inspirations to you, because we asked for your feedback. So what we did last time, we did 11 to 6. So if I'm going to say this, if you didn't listen to that podcast, go back and listen to it and then listen to this one.
And, okay? And while we talk about this, before we get into some of the feedback we got or some more of the feedback we received, I just want to preface this by saying in no way, shape, or form is the order listed here from 5 to 1 any sort of reflection on how we feel about the band's greatness or not greatness, whatever you want to refer to it as. Matt referred to my number 11 last week as an ass clown. Also referred to my number 6 as an ass clown. Doesn't matter.
Ass clowns.
Whatever.
Get it correct.
It doesn't matter. But these are bands that in this order are responsible for making us who we are. And when we say inspiration to people, we don't mean that they inspired you to go out, buy a red Yankees hat, wear it backwards with a white t-shirt and baggy khaki pants.
He did it for the Nookie. Okay, get it right.
I refused to wear a Yankees hat, so I had a red Mets hat. Anyway, let's get to that feedback.
Yeah, how about that feedback?
You know, I'm ashamed to say at one point in time I actually liked Limp Bizkit.
They were good at one point in time, okay? Get it right.
Okay, I love $3 Bill, y'all. But if you've listened to previous podcasts, you would know this.
So your feedback that you received, who do you got?
Oh, I got the usual suspects.
Go on.
Well, I'm going to start off with... Well, you've also read the email. Do you want to read Sean's or do you want to read Alex's?
I'll read Alex's, so you do the other guys.
I'll take the usual suspects.
Go on.
I'll start with Sean. Anytime that we speak of Nirvana and Kurt Cobain, we instantly speak about Sean, because Sean is like the biggest Nirvana fan.
He's a Nirvana freak. Let's go with that.
Yeah, and we would love to get him in the studio for a Nirvana topic. But Kurt Cobain really inspired Sean, the way that he plays guitar. Every time, you know, last week's feedback, we mentioned Steph from right here in New Jersey, who really digs like the local cover bands and the local bands in New Jersey. Well, Sean's a guitarist in a cover band. And let me tell you something. Every show that I've seen him play, he always does a Nirvana song.
Well, it's the same one. It's always...
No, he's done like 3 or 4 different songs. I remember him doing at least 2 different songs.
All right. So he's done a couple of them. Excuse me.
But it's like every single time when it comes to a Nirvana song, it's like, okay, it's just me, the bass player, and the drummer. That's it. Everybody else out of here. And he just fucking destroys it. I remember one time his freaking strings broke off while he was playing.
Yep. I remember that.
But that's how much Kurt Cobain means to him. Mm-hmm. So how about you? You want to read Alex, and then I'll go to our super fan?
Well, I got, actually, before we get to Alex, I've got a little feedback from my brother, because I mentioned to him that we were doing, you know, this whole topic, and he asked, well, can I give you some information? I'm like, okay. So he's a drummer.
You make it sound like your brother's like 10 years old.
No, he's not 10 years old, but still. I mean, he got all like wide-eyed, like, oh, here, you love this movie for some reason, Puss in Boots, where he puts on like that I'm so innocent face.
Oh, I love that movie.
But he kind of got like that, and he gave me, you know, his top 3 drummers, because he's a drummer. He says Tommy Lee. Then he says, now this is definitely the generation gap thing, because, you know, he's still growing up and he's still kind of getting into, you know, music and things like that.
God.
He says the drummer from Alter Bridge, Scott Phillips. Okay. Guy's a great drummer. I saw him live.
So did I. We saw him together.
And I saw him with Brian. And his number one drummer, this is no surprise, Neil Peart.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
And that guy is phenomenal. I've never seen a drummer have a drum solo with his own movie behind him and playing to the movie as a drummer.
I'll tell you, I mean, even watching your brother play, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Nope.
You know, and not for nothing, you sit there and say he's still growing up. Your brother's what now, 23?
21.
21? I thought, no.
21.
Still, he's 21. It's not like, you know, you're making him sound like he's friggin' 10. All right.
Go on. So now...
So, let me get to Joel. I love Joel. I love when Joel... You know, Joel was listening to our podcast from 2 weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was listening to it, he was giving me, like, live feedback as to his thoughts. It was great. Absolutely loved it. But Joel has a few inspirations. There's actually one that's really personal to him. And that's his father. He says his father's the reason that he loves music as much as he does. You know, his father... You know, pushed music on him at a young age and, you know, played different types of genres for him. And now he's trying to do the same for his kids as his kids are growing up.
Keep them away from the pop radio station.
No, he is. I mean, we've gotten emails about stuff he plays for his kids.
Keep them away from the pop radio station.
He actually told me the other day he was letting his 11-year-old listen to Metallica.
Good. Use Miley Cyrus's CDs for skeet shooting.
Anyway, but in terms of actual, you know, besides the personal one, like the father, you know, he says that Jimi Hendrix inspired him to pick up a guitar when he was about 8 to 10 for the first time. He said, I want to play like that. But as he got older, he said that he wanted to play more like Kirk Hammett. And that's in terms of guitar. In terms of just a musical band overall, and I'm sure they're on your list, or at least knowing you, they probably are on your list here in the top five, the Beatles.
We'll see.
But, you know, it's just one of those things where he's become a super fan of the Fab Four.
As most of us do when we get older. You don't really understand what the Beatles are doing because when... You're young, and at that age, you're like, oh, it's dad's music. I don't want to like that. Because I know that's what I was like. And then you get a little more understanding and a couple more years under your belt, and you're like, all right, these guys were young as hell doing this, and they turned the world on its head. With basic songs, like very basic. And then when they got older, they started doing the more experimental stuff because they were tired of playing, you know, the pop stuff. Then they
traveled to India.
They did the India thing. They did the White Album, Revolution Number 9, the Rubber Soul album, and all those experimental things that they did. It's just... No, was it Rubber? No, it was the Revolver album. One of the... I always get those two mixed up, but they were... Doing like the tripped out stuff with the sitar and everything, and a lot of really cool stuff came out of it, but you don't realize that until you get older.
I never looked at the Beatles and said, that's dad's music. Like, I always liked it. Like, I was raised on the oldies. So, to me, you know, stuff like Elvis, stuff like, I know Oldie always messages us about the Beach Boys, but, you know, even still, stuff like the Beach Boys, stuff like, you know, I'm drawing a blank here for some strange reason.
Neil Young?
Yeah, but Neil Young's something totally different.
Neil Young blows.
Like Neil Young falls in that classic rock. I'm going like old, like the oldies type of music.
Chubby Checker.
Bobby Darin, you know.
Frankie Valli.
And you know what? Rip on me for saying this. I don't give a shit. Barry Manilow. Love me some Barry Manilow.
I didn't know you were a middle-aged housewife clipping coupons.
Listen, I can dig Barry Manilow any day of the week, at any time.
Oh, Mandy.
Really? But all that stuff, like, I never looked at it and said, that's my parents' music.
Well, when you're young, you want to form your own identity. Growing up in the 90s, did I want to listen to Smashing Pumpkins or Metallica or the Beatles? Come on, really?
All of it.
No, not the Beatles, because it was dad's music. It was uncool. It wasn't hip.
In high school, it was hip.
No, that's the hipsters now.
No, the hipsters now are, oh my God, it's on a shirt, but I still want to listen to Miley Cyrus.
Don't remind me of how old we're getting. So, let's jump into it now.
Yep, with a big splash.
Bring it in at number 5. What do you got?
So, big splash across the ocean into the country that makes up like 75% of my roots. Into Germany we go. And number 5, I got to put Rammstein.
That's not surprising.
I mean, not for nothing. There are certain things I like about the band. First off, the whole cohesion of the band in general. You know, the way that Richard and Paul are in sync when they're playing guitar together, the interaction between Till and Flake, and the way that they, I don't know if you want to say they parody off each other, they tell a story, however you want to put it, just their stage interaction is funny. It's great. I mean, you've seen them in concert with me twice. You got to admit, that's something that's, it's a chemistry there. There's a chemistry there to that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then Ollie and Chris, you know, your bass and your drummer, and just the way that they play off each other. Even Ollie, like, some of the bass tracks that he does are really, really pretty deep. Really, really interesting. But the thing that, there are multiple things I like about them. Live show, I have never, and you know how much I love Kiss. They outdo Kiss's live show.
And they actually have musical talent. Who would have thought?
But, you know, let's take the live aspect away. Let's go with the album. You know, their albums are great. And the thing that I like about their albums is that they always have this arrangement to them that always seems to fit perfectly. Like, I've gotten albums where it's just like, okay, song one, cool. Song two, okay, cool. Song three, that should have followed song one. Like, they're all jumbled together, but this just cohesively follows each other. The arrangement, it's great. The other thing, and we've talked about this in previous podcasts of bands evolving, their sounds evolved ever since the beginning. You know, you listen to early Rammstein, it sounds like really digital. The drums sound digital. Sounds like there's a lot more keyboard than anything else. But then as they started to take that and translate that to the road, then you started to hear more, okay, well, maybe the drums aren't all electronic, but they're still had electronic feel to it. And then you get to the 2000s, like the mid-2000s, where it's just like, okay, now I'm really hearing the actual, like, raw instruments. You know, you take an album like Rise Arise, and here's, like, to me, the first time where you could sit there and say, yeah, this is pure instruments. And even going forward to all the way up to the most recent, you know, Liebe ist Fralada, you know, it's just something different every time, and it's evolved. You know, you can't tell me, and I know after you've seen them live, you actually went out and downloaded their whole catalog.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, you can't tell me that, and I don't know how much you've listened to their whole catalog.
I've gotten a decent portion into it. One of the things that I find with Rammstein, and correct me if I'm wrong, everything is in German.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I like it. They did a terrible version of Du hast in English.
It's horrible.
It's like, go back to German.
Yeah.
And you don't need to understand what he's saying.
No.
To like what they're doing. That's one thing that perplexes me. I hate movies and subtitles. And I hate when I pick up a magazine or I pick up anything in like the supermarket and I pick it up and I look at the Spanish side of it. Like, fuck, come on, really? Where's English? But when they play the music and it's in all German and I like it, I don't understand how that works. And other bands have tried it. There was another band that tried to come around and do the whole Rammstein thing and do it all in German, but the way that they did it, they were trying to speak perfect German when they were doing it. And I don't know if he's speaking perfect German or if he's just doing it in a way that matches the music.
Mm-hmm.
But when the other guys did it and it was all, it was like in perfect German, it's like, dude, your lyrics suck.
But, you know, like one of the things, like I mentioned, like you get the electronic sound, like you go back and you listen to something like Herzlied, listen to that album, going from there all the way to now, and you'll totally hear something different. You know, you listen to songs like Weißes Fleisch, Asa Juasha, you know, Du Rick So Good off of Herzlied, and then you go and you see it live, it's just like, sounds so much better when you're away from that digital stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the digital stuff sounded good too. Either way, it sounds great.
Some bands just have it.
And then this is, I think, my favorite thing about Rammstein, and I mentioned this in part one of this podcast when we were talking about Ozzy. The fact that a band like Rammstein, industrial metal, can go and do a ballad. And honestly, they make me want to sit there. I would love to hear a whole album of ballads from them. Every time they've done a ballad, I love it. It's just like Ozzy. Every ballad that Ozzy's done, I love it.
I could do without some of the ballads, but that's just me.
I like ballads. But I've spoken volumes. And if you haven't ever checked them out, check them out. They're great. Even check out the music videos. Some of the music videos that they've done are pretty fucking good. But then again, I'm a music video guy.
All right. So, my number five.
Yep.
See, when I'm getting toward the top of this list, it's hard to start talking about these guys because everything's been said.
Mm.
And hearing the way that this, the first track of their career, the way it sounded and the way that people stopped and said, what instrument is he playing? Like, it's mind blowing that nobody did this before him. And we're getting towards the latter part of the 70s at this point.
Oh, wow.
And just watching, even now, just watching and hearing this, saw them live once. That's all I needed. Number five is Van Halen. Eddie fucking Van Halen. Like, I play guitar. How do you not like Van Halen? When you inspire every guitar great or anybody who's picked up a guitar, how can you not say that they inspire you? I mean, I don't want to say it's a no-brainer because if you haven't heard Van Halen ever, you've been living under a rock or never listened to a radio station. But if you don't find his playing to be inspiring, because there's a lot of different people who I could have put on this list high up, because I mean, for me, Van Halen is that unobtainable type of guitar playing. That's why to me he's in the middle of the list. He inspires me, yes. You know, that holy crap, look at what you can do with a lot of practice and a lot of hard work. But the sound and the fact that you can make that sound with a guitar, it's really like mind blowing that you can do that. But when you actually start to try to play it and you start to learn how to do it, I'm sure that there are, you know, kids out there who've picked up guitars and have learned how to play Eruption and, you know, all of his intricacies and things like that. That's great. But for somebody who works a lot and for somebody who doesn't have a lot of free time like that on their hands, it's an unobtainable style of guitar playing because you just don't have that amount of time to dedicate to that. I like the concepts of what he does and the way that he does it, and listening to how he built his guitar and how he road tests his guitars and his amps and things like that, what they did. And this is really a true testament to the innovator that Eddie Van Halen is. He built the original Frankenstein guitar. He shaped the guitar. He built it, rewired it, the whole nine. By all standards of what a guitar should be, it's a piece of shit. It is the worst type of wood, the worst type of neck. I don't even know what type of pickups he put in the guitar, but it shouldn't work. It just really shouldn't be a great guitar, but it's the sound that ignited everything. He used to play his guitars so loud that he felt bad for the people in the front row. So what he did was he took the foam egg crate and put it over the speakers to deaden the sound. But now years later, after he's, you know, been around, seen a few things, he takes his guitars, and after he gets them from, you know, the company who makes them, he takes them out in the parking lot, drags them around, and leaves them out in the rain. He punishes his gear. Then, when he's testing amps, to test amps and guitars at the same time, to make sure that they're durable, after he drags them through the parking lot and in the rain, plugs them in, plays them, and then lets them feedback for a month. He beats the shit out of his gear. Like, he designs everything. It's not like, okay, well, I like this sound, and I like this sound, and I like this sound. No, he sits there and designs. Like, he talks voltages and watts and ohms and, you know, tubes. And he talks the talk of the techs. And he walks the walk on stage. If that doesn't inspire you to want to get out there and want to learn more about guitar, not just play it, like learn legit the gear, the boards and the pedals and how everything works together, I don't know who will. I don't know who will inspire you.
You know, speaking of inspiring, and you were just talking about Eddie Van Halen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, feedback that, and, you know, and I saved this feedback. You know, you were going to share it before, but I said save it because I knew, you know, you said this was going to be on your list. Alex is inspired by David Lee Roth. And Alex is a vocalist, and he said, you know, that when it comes time to play vocals, well, do you play vocals?
No, you sing vocals.
When it comes time to do vocals and to be a front man, that he wants to be, that he's inspired by David Lee Roth,
mm-hmm.
who is just in general a great front man.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So here. Really quick, let's throw this back to the 90s really quick. Who do you side with? Van Halen or David Lee Roth?
Oh. Strictly a judgment call. But I have to go with Van Halen.
Really?
I don't know the whole details. I'm just remember that movie, and that movie's one of my favorites.
If it was me, I would probably take the side of David Lee Roth. Because
I don't know the whole
Eddie
deal.
They were drunks and fucking dicks. And they kicked him out over something. I forget what it was. But they kicked him out over something. And it was so minor and minute that I was like, are you fucking serious? You're just being a dick to be a dick right now.
Yeah.
But
in that case, yeah. I mean, if I knew the whole details, I probably would take David Lee Roth. But just because the movie Airheads is one of my favorite movies. You know it.
Quick, who'd win in a fight, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
No.
God?
No, wrong, dumbass. Lemmy is God.
See, if you haven't checked that movie out, Adam Sandler,
Brendan Fraser,
Steve Buscemi,
and Joe Mantegna.
Hey, you know, I find it very interesting that Adam Sandler and Steve Buscemi are brothers in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like every time I watch a movie, I'm like, hey, there's Matt, there's Brian, there's Matt, there's Brian.
Well, except he played bass.
Yeah, but still.
All right.
Adam Sandler totally fits your brother.
Yeah, it does. If you haven't seen that movie, go watch it.
Yeah.
All right. Number four.
Number four. Nirvana.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I can't single out. I can't pull a Sean and say Kurt Cobain is an inspiration. I can't, be like Stephanie in our previous podcast and say Dave Grohl is an inspiration, because they're both inspirations. It'd be kind of hard for me to say, okay, yeah, Dave Grohl and then Nirvana. And then there's also Chris Novoselic. I'm going to start there. The way he played bass, and this whole bass thing, it comes recently, because I've only been a bass player now for, 4 years? Give or take.
Yeah, go on.
The way he played bass, like, it hung low. It hung down like a guitar. It wasn't like it's up around my neck and I'm going to be, finger picking it and all that stuff. No, it's down around my, lower than my waist, covering my balls. I'm going to play it with a pick just like it's a guitar. And it sounded fucking great. He made bass look like it was an actual guitar. So it was just the way that he played it, the way that he actually addressed it as an instrument. The intensity that he played it with during those shows. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen footage of Nirvana live.
Mm-hmm.
That's inspiring. Then Kurt Cobain, same thing. The way he played, the way that he wrote, how deep some of his lyrics are. You can hear struggle within him. Just if you sit there and you really listen to the lyrics, you can hear that there's something deep inside there. The way that he played his guitar, his whole style, you mentioned with Eddie Van Halen, abusing the shit out of his instruments. I mean, the way that not just Kurt, not just Novoselic, not just Dave Grohl, the way that band put their instruments through punishment. And it was great. It was an intensity. And, these were guys who could sit there and it was, number one, it was effortless. They made it look effortless.
They also didn't care how they played it. It could be close.
But that's the thing. And I was just about to get there. It was chaotic but melodic.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dave Grohl. Sure, Dave Grohl is a drummer. In Nirvana was great. I mean, this is a guy who literally used to play on friggin' plates and pillows and cookware until he got his own drum set. And he got his drum set shortly before he joined Nirvana. But then you transfer that over to present day Dave Grohl, the man who has done everything imaginable to save rock and roll. The man who inspires, who is going to be the inspiration for this generation.
At least he should be. But then again, some people won't listen to him.
But Dave Grohl is honestly one of those guys who's a musical mastermind. So I have to encompass all three into one. I couldn't just single out Dave Grohl. I couldn't just sit there and say, okay, yeah, Kurt Cobain and then Dave Grohl. No, let me just take it all and let me just lump it into Nirvana. Because I'm not going to lie, and this really might sound dick of me. Do I like the Foo Fighters? Yeah. Can I listen to the Foo Fighters all day long? Yeah. Do I think they're a great band? Yeah. Do they inspire me? No. Dave Grohl does, but not the rest of the band.
I see, I listen to them in a different light, so that's
but,
me.
But, I mean, I'm sorry if that comes off as dick, people, but like I said, if I'm going to say it, I have to lump it into Nirvana.
Okay. That's fine. I will stay in Seattle, though, with number four. Because while Nirvana was, you know, as great as they were, it was a very straightforward and straight ahead thing that they were doing. It was literally a plow running through snow. It's what it was. Alice in Chains, on the other hand, was very, very different. They were part of the Seattle grunge sound. However, what inspires me about them is it wasn't Lane doing all vocals. It was Lane and Jerry Cantrell in a very, very intricate blend of their vocals together.
It's eerie.
Then you take the recording techniques of these guys. Everything wasn't stock. Jerry still plays his very first guitar today. It's a G&L guitar. I forget what model it is, but it's the like the off yellow one with the brown checkerboard or something on it. But everything else that he has has been, it's a blend. Like the whole sound is a blend of like three or four amps, and for this song they'll add this amp and take it out for this song, and then take out another amp and put this one in for this song, and it's blended the whole thing. If you try to pick out an amp, a guitar, and a set of pedals and try to play Alice in Chains, you might get close, but you're never gonna duplicate it ever. You can't go out and say, okay, I'm gonna get the signature Slash amp, the signature Slash guitar, and the signature Slash pedals, plug them in, and I will sound just like Slash. You'll come close. Actually, you'll pretty much be there, but you can't duplicate his fingers. But for Alice in Chains, you're not going to get close. And once again, this goes into the whole thing that I talked about with Van Halen. It's not just the playing, because the guys and the songs are great, and you know, they're a lot of them are hauntingly beautiful songs, like Nutshell. And the whole
Nutshell gives me chills.
The whole album, Jar of Flies.
Brother gives me chills.
It's that whole album. It's just an all-engrossing album that didn't get enough recognition, in my opinion. So to listen to what they do, yeah, and the way that it comes out so crystal clear, when the recording techniques they were using weren't meant to be crystal clear. I don't know how they did it, but it works so well.
You know, it's sad because Alice in Chains really, I mean, don't get me wrong, they were popular in the 90s, but their popularity blew up after Lane Stanley died.
And it took them 10 years? Right? Around 10 years before they actually got back on their feet?
Yeah. 9 or 10.
But it's something like that. It was when,
but I'll tell you, while you look that up, you know, he mentioned Nutshell, Brother, both of those songs give me chills. Wood, to me, is one of like the best bass riffs. Heaven Beside You has one of the best drum tracks. There's just so much I could say about them, you know. And he mentions the whole thing about the blend between Jerry Cantrell and Lane Stanley. You know, it's fascinating, not just that blend, but how deep both of them are. Like, I spoke about the depth and the struggle you can hear when Kurt Cobain wrote. It's on a whole different level with Lane Stanley. And at the same time, you know, you look at what Jerry Cantrell writes, and it's just like, that's a man who, like, really cares about those who've been here for our country. You know, anything that, that you see that Jerry Cantrell has written, or anything you hear that Jerry Cantrell has written, always seems to center around, you know, and it's just the easiest way to say it, but always seems to center around, like, war. You know, mainly Vietnam. You know, you listen to songs like Man in the Box, you know, Rooster.
That's one of my favorite songs, Rooster.
You see, to me, it was... Rooster's a great song. It was just so overplayed on rock radio here. It
doesn't matter.
I got really sick of it after a while, but it is a great song.
So, it turns out it's around 13 years, actually.
Wow.
The last album that they did and put out before he died was actually the MTV Unplugged album.
Yeah.
And that was 96.
That was their first show in 3 years.
And then 2009, after that, is when they did Black Gives Way to Blue. And...
Yeah, and I just want to say, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say Rooster's a bad song. It's a good song. I like it. I just don't listen to it as much as I used to because it was overplayed. Better?
I'll give you that.
All right.
But then after they came back from, you know, the long hiatus, it was like nothing ever changed. I mean, to find a singer that fit in so well and to blend everything the way that they did again.
That's eerie.
That was incredible to see that live. So, if you've never checked out the newer Alice in Chains albums, I really like Black Gives Way to Blue. The Devil Put Dinosaurs Here, it's okay. It's not my favorite. It's not the worst. But like I said, you can't say that, you know, the new guy William Duvall didn't step in and did all that he could for the band, because he's an incredible vocalist. But because Jerry Cantrell is there, he makes him sound more like Lane, and that's why Alice in Chains still works so well. If you took Nirvana, if you took the surviving members of Nirvana without Kurt Cobain,
it wouldn't be a thing.
You really couldn't do that. You know, anybody who had a lead singer depart from the band, I always made the argument that that band should no longer exist. Guitarists can come and leave, but you can fill them in, and, you know, every guitarist brings something different to the table, but you're playing the same notes.
Yeah.
So you're going to get almost the same result. Drummers, bassists, the same thing. As soon as your singer leaves, that's a voice. Those are lyrics that they help write. That band should no longer exist. That's my opinion. Call yourself something different. Play the songs underneath a different moniker, but that level of the band is gone.
Yeah, no. I see where you're coming from with that. It's just, it's a one in a million thing that you actually find somebody who's so spot on close to that. But do we want to move on?
Go for it.
Well, let's move on, but let's stay in Seattle.
Okay. Let me guess. Pearl Jam.
No.
Now.
Eddie Vedder. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Pearl Jam, I love Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam is definitely that band where I'm always in the right mood for Pearl Jam. But I'm not somebody who has the best voice when it comes to singing. But when it does come time for me, when it has come time for me to do vocals, which I've done, I always have that Eddie Vedder-esque voice. Like, when I do vocals, I want to do them like Eddie Vedder. Vocally, incredible. Like, he inspires me to want to do vocals. Writing style, again, just the emotion that this guy puts into the way he performs, it's incredible. And when you see him live, or if you see footage of him from back in the day, I mean, now the guy's 50, so he's not like he was, but when he was in his 20s, the man was pretty ballsy live. I don't know if you ever saw the video for... Oh, shit, what video was that?
Is that Spin the Black Circle?
No. The video for Evenflow, where he starts climbing the friggin' the side of the club to climb up onto the balcony to do a stage dive off the balcony.
What was the one where he climbed the scaffolding?
I don't know. That was wasn't scaffolding. It was literally, it was that video.
No, but didn't he climb up over the stage and in the middle of it?
I don't know. That might have been a live performance.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. But, I mean, he used to be, like, ballsy live. I mean, now that you're 50, it's a little hard to be. I don't think he's going to be stage diving anytime soon. But, you know, even I remember I saw them during the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal and the whole Kent Starr report and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget it. He just starts throwing out big boxes of old computer paper. Remember that stuff mm-hmm. that has like the perforated edges?
Yep.
And he's like, hey, here's the Kent Starr report. And he like threw out like 30 boxes. You know, if any of you don't know what that is, it's literally like 10,000 pages about a blowjob. But in all seriousness, though, Eddie Vedder, vocally, energetically, writing-wise, the emotion he conveys, it's just, it's awe-inspiring to me. And agree or disagree, whatever. It's hard for me to sit there and say that all of Pearl Jam is that way, because when it comes to drummers, Pearl Jam has kind of had, you know, like Matt said, you know, you can interchange drummers. You know, Pearl Jam's had a few drummers here and there. Pearl Jam's had a few different guitarists here and there, although they're back to the original lineup. You know, don't get me wrong, there are tracks I love, you know, as a bass player, there are tracks I love. As a drummer, there are tracks I love. My favorite album, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like 10, but I love Vitalogy. Vitalogy, I think, is an underrated album.
Well, after you put out 10, I mean, wasn't 10 the debut?
Yeah.
How do you put out a debut like that?
Very few artists have done it.
Uh-huh.
But Vitalogy was just something that was, it was darker. A little bit darker. And, you know, everybody's expecting another 10, and this definitely wasn't. I actually had Vitalogy on vinyl, and it got damaged.
And that's why you keep the stuff in the sleeves.
Oh, no, I did. Like, I had it. I loved the artwork, but basement flooded. It was down in the basement.
Yeah, it's got character now.
No. But it's like, even if you've seen, I'm sorry, I'm a big behind the scenes guy. I'm a big music video guy. So you saw the way that these guys like laid out a studio to record the stuff. It's like, cool. You're not separating a room. Like, okay, I'm going to do the guitars in this room and the bass in this room and the drums in this. You're not separating it all out. Like, they played together. And you hear that when you hear them recorded. You know, I can't even sit there and point out a single favorite track, because my favorite track will change based on the mood I'm in that day. So,
alright, so you good on Pearl Jam or Eddie Vedder, excuse me?
Yeah, I'm good. I think I've outspoken that one.
Okay, well, we're gonna go south.
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 South. How south? South.
Well, we're going to go California.
Oh.
Where Eddie Vedder was from.
Yeah, that's true.
We're going to go also very old.
Okay.
Okay. So at a very young age.
This is going to be very interesting.
At a very young age, I heard this next group, and what came out to me most in everything that I know about them, it always sounded surreal. It didn't ever sound like it was produced by instruments, because it mixed so well the vocals were done incredibly. So while it was six individuals, I believe, five or six, give or take, it always sounded like it was one person dubbed over many times, but it wasn't. It was all of them together. And it always just inspired me how this group of individuals who just came together by chance, you know, put together such a groundbreaking sound.
I think I know where you're going, but I'm not sure.
They put together such a groundbreaking sound.
If you are going where I think you're going, it's going to be a surprise to me.
And they just... One of my favorite songs that they did in the 80s, it was like, really? Like, how do you get these sounds? Like, it was incredible to me listening to it today. It's just so... It's still surreal. Like, and I study, like, amps and, you know, how to get sounds and, you know, tubes and tunings and things like that. And all, like, the different instruments that go into this. How do you get these sounds? Fucking Beach Boys.
You know, I'm surprised and I'm not surprised.
But think about all the songs that you know from them. Any one of them.
Yeah.
Tell me how it doesn't sound incredible every time you listen to it, and I try to pinpoint what they're doing, and I can't do it.
You never can, because it sounds the same, but it sounds different.
It's all pet sounds.
It's like really?
Really? But like, think of like Surf and Safari and Good Vibrations.
Which you heard me butcher on the last podcast.
But if when you think about these songs in like Kokomo in the 80s.
I love Kokomo.
You can't, like, I can't sit there and say, okay, he's doing this, he's doing this, and he's doing this. I mean, you can do that for any other band on this entire list. You can say, he's doing this, this, and this. He's got, they're using this in this way, and this in this way. This? Fucked if I know.
No.
And that's what makes it so great to me and so inspiring. It's because it's done so perfectly.
It's amazing.
That you can't pick anything. Even on the shittiest recordings. Like, they're very early stuff. It's still the same way.
Do you remember when they were on Full House?
Yeah, that's when the Giants and the Bills were in the Super Bowl. Jesse and the Rippers were big. And the Beach Boys were on the show at the Super Bowl halftime.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where, like, I find it pretty interesting that John Stamos is actually
his friends.
Yeah, and he's actually played drums with them like once or twice.
Yeah, he actually, I think, played with them during that show.
Yeah,
but it's that never happens anymore.
But outside the TV show, because any of that shit could happen on TV. But like, but he's still, actually played.
None of it ever happens anymore like that.
No, remember them on Home Improvement.
Who, the Beach Boys?
Yeah.
I don't remember them on Home Improvement.
Oh, yeah. They were cousins of Wilson.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched that show, like, religiously.
I love that show. Beach Boys were on there, like, once or twice.
But, I mean, just the way that the vocals come through and the way that they did what they did and the way they... It's just so... difficult to even explain it, just because the perfect guitar and the perfect amp matched up with a perfect keyboard, a perfect piano, or a perfect bass and perfect, it's like everything is picked so perfectly. Like, you,
there's, I think what really does it is that the vocals are so well pronounced that it's almost like the vocals kind of mask what's going on behind it, and that's what makes it so difficult to pick it out.
It's a possibility,
but it doesn't matter, because even though the vocals mask it, the vocals are so perfect. And even you take away the vocals, that instrumental track behind it, like you said, you can't pinpoint it, but it's perfect.
It's all perfect, and it was all done in the same studio together. It's perfect.
Yeah, you don't get that anymore.
Fuck this new age of recording. Go back to that way. Number two.
So number two, I'm going a little bit newer, actually a lot bit newer. I'm gonna stay in California, and I gotta preface this: this is the original lineup. And again, I preface this whole thing like, I can't sit there and say that this list in any way, shape, or form reflects the greatness of these artists, like who's the best out of all of them. Because, I mean, honestly, if you've heard some of our other choices, you'd be like, wow, they're number two. But in terms of inspiring me, they're the second band that's inspired me. And they've inspired me more than musically. They've inspired me on many different levels. And I'm going to go with the original lineup of Korn. You know, let's start instrument-wise. You know, I played the drums, like I said, for a long time. And I remember when Follow the Leader came out, that's when I first started to... You know, I heard Korn self-titled. I heard Life is Peachy. I didn't grasp onto it right away. Follow the Leader came out, and I'm like blown away. I saw them on tour like seven times, you know, in my whole life so far. But the original lineup I saw 4 times. But like, as a drummer, I had to have my drum set that way. I had to have a piccolo snare. I had to have like the drum rack. I had to have the cable hat. I had to have like my drum set like that. And I had to play that style. Like, I had to roll that fast. I had to play that fast. And that's what I aspired to be as a drummer. I aspired to be like Dave Ciliera as a drummer. You know.
You wanted to sleep with Jonathan Davis's wife?
No. But that's who I want. I wanted to aspire to be him as a drummer. You know, then you look at Monkey and Head. You know, okay, not going to lie, you've seen pictures, but I have actually braided my hair like Head did. I did in high school. I did again in college. No problems with the braids. I even had dreads at one point, too. But looking at them as musicians, the way that, yeah, okay, they're playing 7-string. They're playing drop B 7-strings. You know, your 7-string standard starts at B, then it goes your E to E. They're doing B, and then I think C to C, if I'm not mistaken.
I've never dropped that low, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're going B and then C to C. 7th string is already at a B, so that stayed normal, but... I wanted a 7-string. I had a 7-string. You saw my 7-string. You know.
Yeah, that was a pretty bad guitar.
It's not that it was a bad guitar. It's just you had to know how to play it. And that was something that they mastered. Like, they mastered the 7-string. I never was able to do it. But it's just something so unique and so different. You know. Jonathan Davis knew how to put on a show. You know, he knew how to get the crowd into it. I like that. But that's not the most inspiring thing. You know, Fieldy. I love the way Fieldy played bass. You know, completely upright, slapping it. I still don't know how I've even watched tutorial videos that he's done as to how to play certain songs. It still doesn't make sense to me. You know, it's like every time that he's playing like that slap bass, I'm like, it's definitely different than the other songs, but it looks the same. And he'll do tutorial videos and you see it like, okay, yeah, but it doesn't sound the same. You know, it doesn't sound the same as when he does it. You know, even friends I know that played bass, it just doesn't sound the same. You know, and they're inspired by the guys, you know, he was inspired by the guys from Faith No More, you know, doing that slap bass stuff. But let's take it to a deeper level. So And I need your response on this one with the deeper level. Of the two of us in this room, I'm the more religious guy.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, and don't get me wrong, there were times in my life where, you know, all throughout middle, you know, went to church all the way throughout middle school, cool. High school came, what's church? College, what's church? You know, when I dormed on campus, every floor had a priest in it, you know, knew the priest, but still, not really churchy. But you and I were doing our morning show back on college radio, and I remember coming across the newswire that had left Korn because all of a sudden he had a religious awakening. And I said to myself, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is some sort of publicity media hype, right? Remember, even said that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since a new album was due out later that year. But it turns out that he really did, you know, as they say, find God. And, you know, he wrote a book about it called Save Me From Myself.
And put out a shitty album.
I never really listened to the album, so I can't comment on it.
Yeah, it was shitty.
But the book itself made me sit there and turn and, you know, I said to myself, hey, listen, this guy's been through all this shit. This guy's done all these drugs, gotten so drunk, you know, doesn't even remember touring with his idol. Doesn't even remember being on tour with his idol, Ozzy Osbourne. You know, just a complete blur. And, you know, one point, you know, when he gets to that point where he's just had enough of it, he cooks up the largest amount of meth that he's ever done, gotten high, and open up a bottle and say, you know what, if you're real, I'm going to live the next day. And he woke up. You know, something like that to me is just like, okay, yeah, God's really there. And that made me sit there and say, you know what? I need to, if he could go through all that shit and he could find religion, I've never done half of that. Like, I've never done any of that shit. You know, I've never touched drugs. I think I've been drunk twice in my life. Maybe three times. But the point is that if he could find God, why can't I? You know, and so I started going back to church. And again, you know, after 3 or 4 years, I started to kind of drift away because of some crazy shit that happened in my life. And then I find out that Fieldy found God. And Fieldy put out a book. And I got that book. And it's like, shit. You know, why am I not, like, why do I keep letting go of this? You know, so none of the inspired me on the musical level, but they've inspired me on the deeper level of finding my spirituality again. And to me, that was, you know, that's something that you just can't replicate in a band. So now that I've gotten deep, how about we go to you?
All right, so we're not going to go spiritual, I'll tell you right now, but we will go to, I think the landscape of rock and roll really changes if this band A doesn't exist or B continued to exist. There's only two guys in the band that actually inspired me, and hands down, Kurt Cobain, Dave Grohl. So we talk about Nirvana again. If the band doesn't ever exist, Kurt Cobain and his legacy and what Nirvana did for music at the time just doesn't exist anymore. And Dave Grohl, who knows what he'd be doing now if he never got into it with the guys, because he wasn't the original drummer in Nirvana.
Nope.
So who knows what would have happened there. But if they continue to exist and he didn't die, what would happen? What would rock and roll look like now? What would they be doing now? Would the Foo Fighters ever exist? You know? What's the impact of that? But the reason why they're on my list is for two reasons. Well, Dave Grohl and Kurt Cobain, but Kurt Cobain inspires in a way that nobody else really could up until my number one. Kurt really taught me to say fuck it, because you can't be perfect all the time. You can't be afraid to do what you want to do what inspires you, because if you do, you're going to sound like everybody else. If you don't take those shots or those chances, you're not going to do something authentic. You're just going to follow the herd, follow the sheep, and just continue on another mundane thing. Dave, on the other hand, give it your fucking all, man. Just give it your fucking all. Anything that he's done, drumming in Nirvana, drumming with Queens of the Stone Age,
Probot,
the Foo Fighters,
them Crooked
Sound
Vultures.
City, the Sound City thing, them Crooked Vultures, the new project he's got going.
Yeah,
recording eight tracks in nine tracks in eight studios and shit like that on the last album. If you don't put your all into this, and if this isn't what you really want to do, how the fuck are you going to come across as authentic? How are you going to really continue down this road of, you know, whatever it is you're doing? You got to be authentic. And the authenticity of Dave, the spirit to say fuck you to anybody who thinks I'm going to do what you want me to do, that's the driving force of Nirvana. Chris Novoselic, in my opinion, kind of was there. He played bass because he was there in the band. He wasn't the outspoken one. He never really spoke like that. Like, Kurt,
he spoke. He was a senator.
Right, but he was a senator. I mean, he's not, like when the band was together,
was he a senator or was he a governor?
Something up in
Washington. He was a politician, yeah.
Right. So he was a liar at one point. But that's
you know, I just have to go out on a limb here and just say, you know what? You say the whole thing that he's like there. You know what? Everybody says that about the bass player. Unless the bass player is the guy that's fronting the band.
Lemmy.
Or Geddy Lee.
But.
Or at some points, Gene Simmons.
He's an ass clown, but.
But everybody else is just like, okay, yeah, they're the bass player.
No, but he was there, but he wasn't the forefront and the figure of Nirvana. And Dave wasn't really either, but you could see when they performed, you could see the performance Dave was giving from behind the drums.
And how can you say that Novoselic was not a performer? The man knocked himself out with his own bass guitar.
You could have done that if we gave you the chance.
You practically did.
But still, I mean, I'm not discrediting him in any way, shape, or form. He just wasn't there. Like, he was there, he played bass, he did a good job. But, okay, in the years since Nirvana, how much have we learned about Dave Grohl?
A lot.
And if Kurt Cobain was still alive, don't you think he'd still be trying to stick it to the fucking man in this whole stupid pop fucking movement that's going on right now?
He would.
Right. And Chris Novoselic was a senator and then came back to playing bass.
But he stopped music altogether because it traumatized him that much.
But here's the thing.
You spend so much time in one thing.
But that's the thing.
But then it's just like when that goes away, you know, especially being close with somebody like that, when somebody you're so close to, not just personally, but even musically, loses their life, regardless of how it is, murder, suicide, as the police would have you believe, it's one of those things that you just, shit, man, I don't want to do this.
But
I got to step away from it.
I understand that. But then if it's something that you are truly passionate about, and you would do it in his honor. Dave Grohl could have easily have said, I don't want to do this anymore. But you know what? He did. And he continued on, and he continued on with doing the Foo Fighters. He wasn't going to do a Nirvana knockoff. There's no way in hell he was going to do that. So he did the Foo Fighters. And anything that he did in memory of Kurt. So while I can understand you saying that, yes, he was traumatized by it, but guess what? If it's what you're passionate about, and if you're that authentic to what you are doing, then you keep doing it. There's no reason not to keep doing it, especially if you could do it in memory of him. Do you realize that the only person who could have stepped in to a Nirvana reunion and have become the lead singer was Paul McCartney? And how fucking legendary is that dude?
That was pretty fucking epic.
But he didn't do it. He was in the middle of it and they didn't do it. He was this close to actually doing it. There was rumors he was going to do it. No, but it didn't happen. But if you're that authentic to the cause and that authentic to yourself in anything, you will continue on through whatever is happening because you know you're doing it for the right reason. And that's why both Dave Grohl and Kurt, you know, they come in at number two on my list because number one started everything. So,
and I just have to say in my little, you know, my little additions there that for those of you who don't know, I will swear until the day that I die that Kurt Cobain was murdered, but everybody else says he committed suicide.
With that little side note, number one.
So this is what started Pokey down the path of music. This is what made Pokey want to play music. This is like their, this is take the other 10 things away and this still stands as to why I want to play music. The original lineup of Guns N' Roses. I will never forget. First off, when we were kids, MTV was in its infancy. It actually, they played music videos all the time.
That's what its job was, because it was music television.
But I will never forget being at a young age. I had brothers who were 8 and 10 years older than me, so they lived on MTV. But the first music video I ever saw was Paradise City. And I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what the fuck the music was. Didn't know the meaning behind anything like that. But that video was centered all around like touring and the live thing. I said, that looks pretty fucking cool. And if I had to single it down to a single member of the band, I would single it down to Axl Rose. I mean, you want to talk about a man who really is full of energy, really brings a crowd into it, really is hyped up about music and the music that he plays. It's Axl Rose. But that video for Paradise City, that did it for me. And then years later, as I become more and more into music videos and I start to go back and look at it, I'm like looking at the you know, the billboards up in the arena in the beginning, I'm like, I've been in that arena. What a shit, that's Giant Stadium. So right here in New Jersey, 90% of that video was filmed in New York City, New Jersey.
New Jersey, because New York City is not in New Jersey.
I said New York City, New Jersey.
Right, and New York City is not in New Jersey.
I'm aware. The live footage was from New Jersey, from Giant Stadium. But during that whole live footage and everything, you also see them walking the streets in New York City in that music district, going through music shops, playing instruments, all that shit. But it's like you look at this sold out arena, this sold out stadium, and just the whole thing with like the Use Your Illusions, you know, banners on the side and all the rigging and everything. and then you just watch the reaction to it. I mean, that made me want to play music. I wanted to do that. And then the other 10% shot over in England. So.
And the part that everybody forgets.
No. But it's just like, that's fucking awesome. I want to play a sold out stadium. I want to hop on a fucking Concorde jet and fly across the Atlantic in 3 hours.
Was Paradise City, now that I think about it, on Use Your Illusion?
Yes, it was.
No, it was on Appetite for Destruction.
I thought it was Use Your Illusion.
Nope, it's definitely Appetite for Destruction.
No, you're right. I mean, it was on Appetite for Destruction, but if you look at the video, you watch the video for it, you'll notice on the side you have the Use Your Illusion banners.
It's a web of lies.
So.
We're on a web of lies.
But yeah, that made me want to play music. So right. I have a feeling I know what your number one is, but knowing you, you're probably going to surprise me.
Number one started it all. Number one, if you know me at all, I actually discovered the band when they were in the period that nobody liked. I started then, and I kept going with it, and then I eventually got back to where everybody says was epically awesome. Just because of my age, I couldn't actually get to that music when it was available the first time around. So I finally get out of the what everybody refers to as the two bad albums. And I get back to the original four. And, yeah. Needless to say, it's been rock and roll and heavy metal and everything like that ever since. And there's no turning back. Because since then, I've found too much. I know too much. Yeah, there's no coming back from rock and roll and metal. And I don't want to change that. Number one is Metallica.
That didn't surprise me.
It had to be. There's no other way to explain it. Believe it or not, I'm probably one of the only people that are out there that finds Kill 'Em All to be meh. It's all right. It's a first album. Ride the Lightning, Master Puppets, and Justice for All on Black Album. Those are the four albums that I'm talking about. Those are the albums that solidified it. For Whom the Bell Tolls. Come on, really? And then, like a Master of Puppets from Battery to. From the Battery to the title track to everything, Damage Incorporated. And then you get to the controversial and Justice for All when, Cliff died and then they bring in Jason and then you can't hear Jason on the album.
I have to say, Injustice for All is one of my favorites.
They took the bass and just happened to unplug it from the amplifier when he wasn't looking. And then the Black Album. Everybody knows the Black Album. There's nothing more that needs to be said about the Black Album. But for me, what really did it wasn't necessarily just watching. Or excuse me, just listening to the music. It was watching the performances and watching James and Kurt and Lars and whoever the bassist was at the time. You can tell that those guys had something special. And just watching and hearing and everything else, you knew that these guys had poured everything into this. And watching what they can do, it's just mind-blowing. A guy who can play guitar as good as James and sing at the same time, and knowing that it's not always the lead guitarist who's soloing all the time. James had that too. Lars isn't the greatest drummer in the world, but he did what he had to do on the albums to make them sound good.
Yeah, like I said, he was on my list.
And whoever the bass player was at the time, and I think, honestly, they have the best player that they've had in their entire history playing bass for them now. Rob is doing an incredible job of playing bass for them. And he even, in a recent interview, said that he is, you know, he's the best player that he could be now because of Metallica. So I don't think that there could have been a better resolution for them at bass than him. So I'm really glad to see that. But it's so mind-blowing to think that what if that bus accident on the Master of Puppets tour, you know, took Metallica, all of them, where would we be in music today? You know, but for me, no Metallica. I find it hard to believe that I would still be listening to what I'm listening to. But even going through like the Load album and finding them during the Load album, I mean, I still like that album regardless of what everybody else says about it. And it's just, it's a different album.
Yeah, Load was just something that was totally,
just totally different. And, you know, King Nothing and Until It Sleeps, I mean,
I love those.
To me, listening to those takes me back to playing, like, the original Resident Evil on PlayStation. Just, that is, like, my soundtrack to that game, because that's how much I listened to it. And despite listening to it as much as I did, I still didn't realize up until recently that the only country song that they've ever done is on that album. Complete with slide guitars and the twang and everything. If you don't believe me, pop it in. Listen to track 11. Listen to Mama Said. That's Metallica doing country. Before country was popular, I might add. This is back in 96. All right there, Pokey.
Anyway.
But yeah, then going into like Reload.
Reload was a little...
Oh, hold on. I could tell you I like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Actually, the first 6 songs are really good. Then track 11, and that's it.
Yeah, I think I like 3 or 4 off of there.
Well, there's Fuel, The Memory Remains, Devil's Dance, Unforgiven 2, Better Than You, and Slither. And then number 11 is Low Man's Lyric.
Yeah,
I can deal without the rest of that album.
They only like 4 of those.
Actually, I could even say I like Carpe Diem Baby. That's 8 tracks on that album out of 13. That's not bad. But then when they missed, they fucking missed.
Don't even get me started. They Garage Inc.
Fucking, well, Garage Inc. was really... I like Garage Inc. Fuck you.
I wasn't crazy about... There, again, 2 songs, could have done without the rest.
On 2 discs? Are you crazy?
Nah.
They covered the British wave of heavy metal. That's what they did on disc number 2. That was the older stuff. And then disc number 1 was all the new covers. They covered Sabbath, Bob Seger, the Misfits, a lot of Misfits. They did Blue Oyster Cult. They did Motorhead.
I just wasn't crazy about it.
Oh, so good.
I mean, maybe now I'll go back and I'll take a listen to it, but at the time when I got it, I wasn't crazy.
All right. But let's go ahead and wrap this up. So we are going to count down from, you know what, you want to do the whole thing or do you want to just do 5 to 1?
No, we're going to do 5 through 1 because you know what? If you didn't go and you didn't listen to part 1, you're an ass clown and you need to go listen to part 1.
They're not Kiss.
They're not Kiss. They're Chad Kroeger. They're ass clowns. Chad Kroeger's a bigger ass clown.
Actually, I was considering putting them on my list just because that shows you what not to do.
Anyway, seriously, I don't mean to offend any of you, but if you haven't listened to part 1 of this, then you don't need to know what was on part 1 of this. It just means you're too lazy to go back and listen to it. So make me shut up, go back, listen
to part 1. Stop spewing your hate and tell us your list.
Fine. So, number 5 for me, I had Rammstein. Number 4, I had Nirvana, the whole band. Number 3, Eddie Vedder. Number 2, not just musically, but also spiritually, Korn, the original lineup. And number one, the band that started all for me, Guns N' Roses. And if I had to pinpoint to a member, Axl Rose.
All right. So number five, Eddie Van Halen. Number four, Alice in Chains. Number three, the Beach Boys. Number two, Nirvana, Kurt, and Dave Grohl only. And number one, Metallica.
Cool. So on that note, email us.
Thoughts, comments, questions, concerns.
Call me an ass clown.
They go to 11, all spelt out, at yahoo.com.
Or also, hit us up on Facebook.
Yep, facebook.com/theygoto11. And
trying to do this Twitter thing. We have Twitter followers. I just don't know how the fuck to tweet.
Well, I don't understand the point of tweeting, but that's
email
again,
you know
me.
What? Email us a tutorial on how to tweet.
That's not a bad idea.
That's what I want.
But also, in all seriousness, if you go on the Facebook page, we've been putting a lot of news stories and just stories from the music industry that we find to be quite comical and hilarious, or you know, just like what the fuck, yeah. Like for real.
So go check it out.
Go back. Go check out the Facebook. Share it to a couple of your friends. You know, the more the merrier. Let's get more listeners on here, you know, because the more that we hear from you and the more ideas that we get from you, exactly, the better we are. So,
you know what? I'm at a blank. I want to hear somebody suggest a topic.
I'm down.
I'm blank. So, on that note, you want to wrap it up?
We'll wrap it up. I'm Matt.
And I'm Pokey.
Wow. Just Pokey, huh?
Okay. I am...
the pokey little puppy.
Sure. No, I'll come up with something else. But anyway, he's Matt. I'm Pokey.
And where they go
wait,
to 11.
Wait. Still haven't thought of a name yet, but it turns out I was wrong about the Guns N' Roses Paradise City video. It doesn't have the Use Your Illusion banners on the side. It is from Appetite for Destruction, but still, to be able to sell out an arena like that, to sell out stadiums like that on your first debut album, that's pretty fucking epic.
Just a little bit.
So yeah, it is the Appetite for Destruction. The Use Your Illusion one was for Estranged, but
here you go.
But anyway,
where they go to 11.
No. You're Matt.
Are we gonna say this for a third time? I'm Matt,
and I wear Crocs Pokey.
I don't know why you do.
They're comfortable.
And where they go to 11. So turn it up. We'll talk to you next time.
Peace out.
Later.